Welcome to Mama Tales, a podcast on our collective motherhood journey. I'm your host, Sally Kuria. Thank you for joining me today. In this episode, we will continue listening to Elsie. She is a 43-year-old woman who is raising awareness on endometriosis, and she does this through her own life experiences. Since this is the second part, I would advise you to listen to the first part if you haven't already. That's the previous episode, episode 60, so that you'll be able to get proper context on what's coming up in this episode. Last week, we left off with her story when she went for therapy after her divorce. When the therapist told her that she was grieving, she agreed, yes, that she was grieving. That's why she had gone there, and that she thought she was grieving her marriage. But her therapist told her that she was grieving a whole lot more. The grief of the child she lost at 16, her job that was transitioning, her marriage, and the fact that the recent surgery that she had gone for her endometriosis saw her lose her ovaries. In this episode, she talks more about this loss, her journey towards healing her body and mind, and everything that has come with it. We also get a little bit into the cost of everything that it takes to manage endometriosis. Here's a little bit of what's coming up.
And I think I was sharing with you earlier that, again, women, we have to unlearn carrying pain as part of our identity, because society has also made it. Like, the minute you're born, pain should be part of your identity. Like, you carry it. It's part of you. Like, you know, that's why we've normalized period pain. That's why women will suffer in silence for years and in shame, because they can't come out and speak up. Yet, if we speak up, we're then acknowledging there's a problem.
Before we get into that, I just want to remind you that I'll be sitting down with Elsie and her gynecologist, Dr. Muteshi, to talk more about this condition and the options and the community that exists for women suffering with it. Thank you to everyone who has already registered. I'm overwhelmed, which is amazing. It just means that this space was very necessary. But not to deter you, registration is still open and entry is absolutely free. We will be at Baraza Media Lab on Riverside Drive on March 26th from 5 p.m. So if you feel like this will be valuable to you or a friend, please share and see you then. All right, let's go on with Elsie's story.
So again, it's like now just, again, just putting a cap on every chance I ever thought that I would ever be a mother. That was the day when now I realized, ooh, like, I didn't realize, like, I was grieving. I'd been grieving. And I was not giving myself that room to actually grieve and acknowledge that, yes, it's a loss. And, like, we shouldn't just, I don't think it's advisable for people to just walk around on this planet without processing loss of any kind. It's my child, it's my ovaries, it's my marriage. At the time, I had just also finished, my role was redundant at Unilever, which was not a bad thing. It was wonderful. It was a beautiful end because I was getting into another thing. I mean, there was just so much. But I wasn't processing that. And I didn't realize that that did not define me as a woman. So I had walked around this planet believing that being a mother defined me as a woman, was my essence. Yes, I believe it. Like, it's like the signature of a woman, like our womb, our uterus. It's such a sacred thing, right? It's a thing that differentiates us and distinguishes us from the other gender. Like, we have this thing we're able to nurture. But even though I cannot physically, like, and naturally conceive, I can actually do it in other ways. It can be assisted. I think one of the I usually say it's like a funny way. My gynecologist, I love him. You know, he, you know, like when he was now after surgery, you know, in the morning he comes like, yeah. Then he straightens himself, like, yeah, sorry, Elsie, I have tough news. We weren't able to save your ovaries. Then he held my hand, basic, but you know, it's okay, you'll be fine. And you know, your uterus is beautiful. Aren't they? You from one end of the spectrum to the other. I'm like, wait. I mean, just give me a minute to process that and then let's come here. Can you just give me a minute? And you know, like, yeah. By the way, and I appreciate, by the way, just a side note, you know, doctors are robots, by the way. You know, them, they're just, they look at the body. They don't know how to see our emotions and what we're going through. Them, they see the disease. Them, they're just like, this is a walking disease. I need to treat this. So they don't know how we're processing all those things. And I've learned to extend them grace in that regard. But again, without him, his compassion, you know, without his also, he's optimistic more than I am. Every day he just keeps telling me, Elsie, we'll be fine. You'll be fine. He's like, we'll find a solution. So therapy played a big part in me just, okay, fine. I'm acknowledging that, yes, there's this, right? I went off the rail here. It was such a, like a bombshell for me. She just told me, she's like, Elsie, you are, because at the time, I think I was going in for therapy. I was like 41. She's like, Elsie, you're a 41-year-old, but your 16-year-old is your, what did she call it? Who's that? How do we call, like, the president, the defense, the, what do we call the chief of defense?
Whatever.
You know that.
Commander-in-chief. Yeah.
Exactly. She's like, you have a 16-year-old commander-in-chief who is now protecting you from experiencing any pain and therefore is also not allowing you to mourn that loss.
Yeah.
So that's when I went into the exercise of now writing that letter, acknowledging her, saying sorry to her, saying, girl, you can just, you know, Wusa, just calm down. Just, I got this. And yes, I acknowledge that. Yes, thank you for protecting me when you needed to protect me. But I got this. Like, I have to leave now. I have to almost like not let you go, but just I acknowledge you, but I need to move. Like, I need to progress. I didn't realize that. That was just like, I was like, what? It was a moment. And so that's, it was a lot, and that really liberated me. And now I'm just like, I would have loved to be a mother. Oh, I'd have loved to be a mother. Me, my children, let me tell you something, they'll be spoiled. Rotten.
Yeah.
In fact, I used to say, in my head, I used to have this narrative of, it would be very difficult for me to discipline my children. Like, I don't know what would make me do that. But again, that's a response from, again, the experience now from childhood. But I feel like, and I know that I will be such a badass mom when I do get that opportunity. So at the moment, that's what I'm praying about, and I'm asking God, you know, what's that opportunity for me? So if I opt for an assisted, method, or if it's adopting, I am game.
Yeah.
I am so game.
So you're still very open to being a mother?
100%.
It never changed.
Never changed. It just was, I was carrying it as a, I mean, it was defining me. And therefore it was limiting me from doing and living again. Yeah. Just, I was like, is it necessary for me to define myself as not worthy of having a child or being a mother or being loved because I can't have my children naturally? Because again, there's a massive stigma in society. Like, women who adopt are judged very harshly. You know, we know, we've seen, you know, media personalities. I think we know of one big one, you know, who, you know, just got backlashed, you know, for just choosing to just adopt. But what's wrong with adoption? Like, what's wrong with us? Like, we don't, you know, I've seen sad stories, and I've heard sad stories of from the endometriosis community of women whose marriages, again, are suffering because, again, they can't conceive. Mm-hmm. And their husband's just leaving them because, again, they believe if they can't see a child with you, then you're of no use to them. Yeah. So it's like, so am I, besides, like, our relationship is, like, the foundation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what about that? Like, is that nothing or am I just an object? And if you think about it also, to add salt to injury, this is also Sindiki's word by our aunties.
Yeah.
It's like, Mama, why aren't you pregnant? Why aren't you giving this guy a child? So it will be used as an excuse again for these men to cheat, to go and have children elsewhere. I mean, I'm like, okay, fine, guys. We live in a very liberal country. As much as we like to danganya ourselves that we don't, I'm like, our constitution allows for polygamy.
Yeah.
If I can't have children and you want children, let's have that discussion, right? Let it not come up as like an afterthought in marriage and then say, by the way, oh, I wanted. But we never discussed that. We never agreed. And so let's have room for those kinds of discussions, and let's also just try and address the stigma around, you know, what does motherhood actually mean? And if this route is not available for someone, like, are we going to now judge them to hell and back and say that they're nothing, that they can't contribute to, you know, this country's economy and stuff like that just because? And I think I was sharing with you earlier that, again, women, we have to unlearn carrying pain as part of our identity, because society has also made it. Like, the minute you're born, pain should be part of your identity. Like, you carry it. It's part of you. Like, you know, that's why we've normalized period pain. That's why women will suffer in silence for years and in shame because they can't come out and speak up. Yet, if we speak up, we're then acknowledging there's a problem. And the other thing that I learned again in therapy was, did you know that now sitting with this pain will actually, you will normalize being mistreated and being shortchanged, and you will just accept mediocrity. You're quiet, and you'll just be like, yeah, but this is the journey. No,
it's the reality for a lot of women, and unfortunately we pass it on to our kids.
Oh my God.
And then they pass it on to their kids. It's just one of those things. Even if you look at it, you probably just grabbed it from the influences in your life.
Mm.
Like, we're meant to just be quiet. Right.
And the other thing for me, why I also, now I think for me, I'm celebrating myself also for how far I have come. I'm like, I will be a better mother knowing what I know now, having dealt with some of my pain. Right. So I'm not going to pass it on to my child.
To go back to with your relationship with your doctor, right? At the beginning,
mm-hmm.
even as he was telling you that you need to get pregnant, he didn't exactly explain why the urgency to do that, right? Then is there a case to be like, there's very limited information and victims are just expected to just figure it out themselves? Yeah. Like, how do you even do that?
I think that's the reason why I started the foundation, to empower women with the knowledge so that they know that they can ask these questions, right? So it shouldn't be automatic that someone just comes, you go into a consultation room, immediately you leave, they're like, we're going to put you on birth control, we're going to do this, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you're just saying yes to everything without questioning. Hey, but wait a minute. Hold up. What is the impact of this prognosis? Like, in future, if I want to conceive, if I want a child, what is this choice going to, how is it going to play out in the future? Like, is there anything that I should be mindful of?
Yeah.
And for me, I think that's where the difference is between my current gynecologist and the one I was seeing, the first one I ever met. Mm. The one that I'm seeing right now will sit you down and ask, by the way, he will give you time to ask all the questions.
Yeah.
He's not in a hurry, you know? And I think that's what's happening with a lot of, we our healthcare system in this country, of course, we know is under-resourced.
Yeah.
We know that for a fact. So there are like, I think 1,000 doctors or something, like 5,000 or that, for in this country of like 50 million people.
Mm.
What are we talking about? Like,
yeah.
How? Right? So of course we're going to have now, people who will make rushed and informed decisions. Because, again, they lack the information, they lack the knowledge. And also, the doctor is just trying to solve a problem for here and now. He's not thinking about the future, for tomorrow, for now. Him is just trying to sort out your pain now. But we have to know as women that we have the power to ask those questions. Especially, I usually emphasize this to the younger girls. Like, you have permission, ask the questions. I did a couple of videos just for, you know, like if you're going in for a consultation, what questions do you ask your doctor? Like, what must you know to prioritize? Like, the fertility conversation, it's like so important. And like my gynae and I say, the journey of, or rather managing endometriosis, 20% of it is actually surgery, 20%. So there's 80%. And what's that 80%? There's your mental health, because you're suffering, you're going through pain. And I think we think pain is normal. It's like, it's okay. There's not a chick. She shared with me, though, somewhere I was speaking. You know, I was just encouraging them. I was like, girls, please don't sit with pain. She was like, okay, so, but how do you know pain is bad? I was like, so how bad is your pain?
Yeah.
And she's like, I pass out. I was like, hey, you pass out?
Yeah.
And you're like, that's fine. She's like, and how long do you pass out for? She's like, I don't know. It's like maybe 20 minutes or something. And I'm like, there you go. But we've normalized this.
Yeah.
So for you, Sally, like with your daughter,
yeah,
it's telling her, speak up. Speak up. There's no shame. Let's not shame our children when they come to us and we're telling them. Because that's where it comes from, right? So we don't realize that it's this, like for me, I didn't realize that if I spoke up early, right? And if I had a more knowledgeable healthcare professional, then we would have addressed this issue a long time ago, sooner rather than later. I wouldn't have had to lose my ovaries. I wouldn't have had to go through all this. I would have preserved my eggs. You know, like I would have done something to give me a chance at motherhood.
Yeah.
So I think again, it's just information, and it's so true. Like, we perish figuratively and sometimes also physically because of a lack of knowledge. So I think for me, that's the thing that I think the fire in my belly now is helping girls realize that dream. So like for me, like when Charles writes to me and he sends me like a message from a client who was suffering with endometriosis and was struggling to conceive, and he treated the endometriosis, and then now she's pregnant and she gave birth. Hey, those for me are just now the success stories.
Yeah, yeah. And for you, I think I've seen yourself, or rather someone described you as an endometriosis survivor, right? So after the surgery, were you completely done?
No.
Or?
And yeah. Endometriosis doesn't go away, unfortunately. It doesn't. But I've gone through an excision surgery. So he harvested, he removed everything. And to date, I've not had a period, which is great. I miss it sometimes. I'm like, just the essence of womanhood. I'm like, you know, just experiencing a period, you know, just seeing that blood and just, it's like part of womanhood, right?
Yeah.
So like nowadays I always pass like I'm in a store, a supermarket, and I'll go by the pads and I'm like, wow, like this whole category has evolved. Oh, wow, look, there's cotton products. There's all these nice, funky products nowadays. I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, well, then I move on. So now I'm in an interesting season now, which is perimenopause, which is now protecting. I'm going through hormone replacement therapy because now I don't have my natural estrogen and progesterone, which is, of course, the role of the ovaries. But again, which plays such a critical role. I didn't know. Again, all these things, you just learn. Like, I think I'm learning on the go, like as we go. You know, that the estrogen actually plays a critical role in protecting me from, and you, from premature heart failure and osteoporosis, which is bone density. I just thought like estrogen is just happy hormones.
Yeah.
That's it, just to make me happy. That's the one job it had. That it has in life, but it's critical. I didn't know. And so now I'm in another stage of dealing now with the effects of endometriosis. Now I'm perimenopausal, experiencing hot flashes, but we're managing the hot flashes because I'm using topical estrogen and then progesterone, which is the coil that I have, Mirena. So again, like I've entered into a new level of a struggle.
Because Mirena is a birth control.
Yes, it is.
So you're on birth control,
yes.
Despite the fact that.
But just to enjoy the benefit of progesterone, that's it.
Wow, that's crazy. It's funny how much more we have to do to replace the natural workings of the body just because one thing refused to work the way it's supposed to work. Damn. And what are the cost implications of all of this?
I feel like this could be like a part two.
Yeah, because I'm like,
where?
Because I think it could be a very huge barrier.
Massive.
Sally,
that's such an important question.
Yeah.
To date, endometriosis and reproductive conditions for women, majority of them are not covered by insurance.
That's exactly what I hoped you wouldn't say.
All right, but here I am.
Are you serious?
The question, and therefore,
so insurance is not going to cover it.
So there are some. And because of the muscle of the size of the corporation that you work for example, like the big telco that we know, I mean, they can, like, they'll get anything up to IVF. I have had, Like that's the kind of benefit that they can experience. And they can enjoy such benefits, right? Because those are the perks because of the size of the company. And because this is the organization, again, that's paying the insurance company. So the insurance company will bow. Yeah. But guess what? You're an individual. You're one person. Yeah. You come and tell the insurance company, yeah, by the way, you should cover me for it. They're like, no, that's an exclusion. It's not exclusion. Because, again, there's a genesis to this whole story. The insurance company have unfortunately categorized endometriosis treatment under fertility. So the minute they hear things like hormone replacement therapy, they're just like, this is fertility. There's no hospital you will go to. And if your doctor has rightly prescribed for you hormone replacement therapy drugs and whatever that is, to protect me from premature heart failure, baby, this is not even about me trying to conceive or have a child. Like, I already don't have my ovaries.
Yeah.
Like, how much more information do you need to cover me? But no, I'm paying out of pocket and it's not cheap.
On average, how much money do you spend?
Annually, about, so quarterly, about 6,000. So quarterly 6,000, so that means 6 times 4, 24,000. So for the rest of my life until I get to my legal, quote-unquote, menopausal age, I am going to pay out of pocket.
Are you serious?
Yep.
And we haven't even talked about the previous...
No, we've not talked about that.
And the surgeries.
We've not talked about that.
We've not talked about... Which are also not covered.
Yes. Some of them we had to twist, like the insurance companies. We had to produce reports for them to cover. And some of them covered, like, you know, like, okay, fine, we'll cover a tenth. I love for the civil servants because NHIF will cover them and they'll go for those surgeries and it's paid for. But me, who's just a girly on the streets, yeah, so there's gaps in the healthcare sector in such a massive way that then when I think about it, we are not giving a fair chance to women to realize that dream of motherhood. Why can't we support them? In fact, women are considered a liability by insurance companies. Why? Because again, we're very aware. So we know we'll go to the hospital more than men.
Yeah.
My boyfriend, hardly, he'll never use his insurance. You're the one who'll deplete yours.
Yeah,
it'll be over like month 3 because you've gone in for the cold, you've gone in for the headache, you're like, your joints are aching, you're like,
yeah.
So we have to work so hard again to go against that grain.
Yeah.
And it's tough. And I can promise you for the years that I've done this advocacy work, it's tough because unfortunately, even women at the harshest judges of women like us. Like, what are you going through? Like that, you know, the rest of us are going through. And I'm like, again, I extend so much grace to those women, but I'm like, we have to stand together. We have to stand together. So when it comes to period pain, when it comes to my ability to conceive or not, if I can't, just love me. Like, doesn't mean I am less. Let's stop. I mean, there are these cliques of like, yeah, now all the mothers start, you know, working together and all married couples start working together because all of a sudden these single people don't know life and, you know, like, I'm like, what do you mean? But save for just you having a child and someone you're responsible for, how is our life different? We have the same dreams of, you know, being mothers. We want to realize that, you know. And, you know, just... give me the opportunity to also nurture, you know, and take care, like, to come and love on your child.
That's
just true. Let me experience motherhood by proxy.
So, like, how have your friendships changed over the years?
Well, that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
I feel like I have very strong friendships. There are some, you know, that we rode a wave and a season together that just ended. And again, I can't now, you know, I can't arrive at the conclusion that it is because I am divorced, single, unable to give birth. I can't use that, right? I don't know why, right? Or even if I feel like I know, you know, we did not talk about that.
Yeah.
And I think for me, the biggest takeout, like when it comes to friendships and relationships in general, is just communicate.
Yeah.
Right? So me, who's feeling shunned by you, I need to come and say, by the way, I really enjoy our friendship. I might not understand what motherhood means, like, you know, like what your journey demands of you, but I would love to still, like, whatever opportunity there is, I would still love to pursue a relationship and also be a part of that, because I feel like that's what we don't do well, especially from an African context. You know, we don't communicate. We don't communicate our expectations, and it's okay. Like, it's okay for me to say to you, yeah, or for you to say to me, else imagine, like, I probably have room for once a month.
Yeah.
Or are you okay with just coming? Because me, probably I work like for a fully remote company. You know, do you just want to come to my house and work from my house? And then, you know, let's just use that as an opportunity. Like, we've also got to innovate, you know, those pockets. And we have to be very intentional about creating those pockets of opportunities for us to connect and remain connected. But it starts with communicating, you know. And, like, there's a pal of mine, like, she's one of my very, very, very good friends who lives in Voi. Like, I think I talk to other pals and, you know, they always hear me. I'm like, yeah, I'm taking the train. I'm going to Voi. They're like, aye. Like, you're always in Voi. I'm like, what does it cost me?
It's
the train is 700 shillings. To Voi, 700 shillings. I can continue working while I'm on the train. I get there. We have a good time. And I can't keep using that excuse that she's in another county. I'm like, but can I get there?
Yeah.
Is it within, again, my ability to get there? So I'm like, and then she's got kids. Again, all my, you know, a few of my friends, some of my friends have kids, and they allow me to love on their children.
Yeah.
In fact, they're always like, Kai, you know, it's like LCA. I'm like, yeah, but I love them. I love your children. And then they deserve to know that they have an auntie who loves, because I want to also make their growing up experience memorable.
Yeah.
Like, for me, there's an aunt of mine. Oh my God. In fact, she's my mother.
Mm.
Because she also contributed in such a big way to the woman that I have become to date. And I will never, I mean, that's part of my dream, you know, because, like, that's what I wanted to be to someone else, like, you know, to another child, to a child, of course, that comes into my life. So I want to, there were good things that I grew up experiencing. And yeah, of course, there were the horrible things. But if I have the opportunity to pass that down to anyone, I would.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat, I would.
One last question. What kind of support exists now for women who are going through endometriosis?
Well, there are a lot of, there are advocacy groups that are out there. I mean, there's a lot of interest right now for around this whole topic, and which is great, because we never had it. We absolutely never had it. And so when I look at this space, you know, like, because the foundation started almost 9 years ago, when I look at then and now, I'm like, wow, massive strides. You know, there are centers of excellence, there's a specialist that I know of, two actually, you know, trained in that space and being very deliberate about, of course, also creating that space for women to come in. I mean, there could be more. I don't have the information. I'm not following all the doctors around here. But there are great advocacy groups that are out there that are creating that space and that environment for women who are struggling and just, again, trying to find the right care, right? That, I think, is something that I have seen evolve and get better. And now I've seen a lot of women also now coming up and speaking up about it without feeling shame. I mean, there's still women who, I mean, in fact, they don't want to identify as endometriosis survivors. They don't. They're just like, immediately, if you say that I am this, it's like, yeah, it's like people are now going to probably like walk away from me. It's like the stigma with HIV and AIDS. You remember the first days, I think, the early years. And there's still some stigma that we must address. But we continue to do that. And that's why we make it okay for these women to come out and share. And so for me, at the center of everything that I do, and again, the thing that is the fire in my belly is the girl, is the 16-year-old girl who's starting her menses and is just realizing, oh my God, I'm in pain. I want to end that normalization so that she has a chance at motherhood or whatever that is, whether or not she wants to be a mother. I mean, and she's too young even at that stage to understand like what that is, but at least let's give her a chance because we provide a safe space for her to come and live it.
And thank you so much for the work that you do. I know, I mean, a lot of it is rooted in a lot of pain, especially personal pain, right? But so long as you're able to help even one person, there's purpose to your work. So thank you so much for doing it and for sharing your story here. And do you have anything else you don't like to add?
No, I think the unfortunate thing about this whole condition and like when I share the story, it's like people, I think human beings just, I think the only thing they want to live with is the pain. Yeah. I think I would love for people to actually see that I am a fully functional being.
Yeah.
And so aside from, yes, the challenges that I'm going through, that I'm dealing with, which is the same, I think, for other women who are struggling. I think we want space. We want to know that there are people who are compassionate and who will also push us when we don't realize it, that when we're sitting there with pain and we're just, you know, and we're not addressing it, someone who will push us to say, hey, I think you should go to the doctor. Yeah. Just pick the positive and don't, you know, like don't weigh us, don't be like around and say, oh my God, no. I don't like that. Like we're okay.
Yeah.
We're okay. It's just that but it's just, yeah, like let's understand, let's make a decision that this thing is so huge, it actually deserves attention.
Yeah.
And we need to actually make it and elevate it to become a public health issue. Like, why should so many women continue suffering? Let's do some, rather than, yeah, oh, yeah, well, yeah, no. Let's do something about it.
Yeah.
Help us to challenge the insurance companies. Help us to push to get a policy in place. Yes, include, you know, all these disorders, you know, and include them in the, you know, in the menstrual health, in the MHH policy that we've got. We've got a beautiful policy, but it's just not being implemented. It's not being executed out there. So it's those are the things for me. I would just love support in that space. I would love people to come, you know, to fund us, to support us, you know, so that we go out there, we go into schools, we go into, you know, we have more forums and opportunities to talk to women and girls and even men to empower them to know that, hey, this could be your daughter. What do you do when this happens, right? So don't worry. Let's ride this horse together.
I want to thank Elsie Wandera for sharing this very vulnerable story with us. She is the founder of Endometriosis Foundation of Kenya and has been doing incredible work in bringing attention to this disease. If you'd like to offer support to her work or to learn more about them, I have left their details in the show notes. Do you have a story you'd like to share with us? Tell me about it. I'm currently recording stories, so if you have a story on something that has impacted your parenting journey, fill out our story submission form in the show notes of this episode. Remember that your story is powerful. You can also show support to this space by sharing an episode that you've loved with a friend or two, or by offering monetary support. Your support will go a long, long way in helping me get these episodes to you every week for free. Remember to catch us up on our socials. I'm doing something very interesting there. I mean, let's say that, but it's true. It's true. I'm having a lot of fun with my socials. And you can just check that out at Mama Tills Podcast on Instagram and on TikTok, as well as signing up to our newsletter. All of these links are in the show notes. Or you can even just go head on over to our website. That's mamatillspodcast.com. Next week, I have a very different episode for you. And it's kind of linked to the socials. So maybe you want to just check out the socials first. Anyway, so that episode is all about expectations versus reality. But kids edition. Catch you in the next one. Bye.